Welcome to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. I'm your host, Jen Alex, and the goal of this show is to uncover communication strategies and behaviors that you can use to improve the way that you show up and perform at work. We'll talk about what effective communication looks like in action so that you can apply it to your own career. If you'd like a written summary of each episode, subscribe to our weekly email newsletter by visiting vautiercommunications.com. Welcome back to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast. Today, we are going to talk about crucial or difficult conversations. If you've been following our newsletter over the past couple of years, you have seen that we include a tip each week or every other week for crucial conversations. And I think this is a really important topic because if you haven't had these yet in your role, you will at some point. So it's either something that you have experienced or will be experiencing. And it's important to know how to show up for these different conversations. First, what do they look like? Second, how do we prepare for them? And third, how do we organize and actually deliver those in the moment? First thing I want to ask both of you, when we talk about or think about difficult or crucial conversations, what types of interactions come to mind for you guys?
The one that pops up most, Jen, is just one-on-ones, general one-on-ones with probably management, right? It would likely be someone above us, a level or two. But these one-on-ones are almost always productive, or they should be productive in nature. And the idea behind that and what makes them productive, I think, is really clarity, number one, and then consistency. And when I say clarity, you've got to have transparency around expectations on the role, the responsibilities. We almost look at it as, what exactly am I being evaluated or what am I responsible for? And then how is that being looked at through your lens? Your lens being the lens of the manager, your senior leader, whoever it might be that you're having these one-on-ones with. Mm-hmm. But as most people know, we don't read minds. So it's hard for us to think as individuals in the workplace, I bet my boss or my manager or my senior leader wants this. Mm-hmm. It's way easier to play the game of what do you want or what is expected of me? And then how am I going to be graded on that, so to speak? How am I going to be evaluated on said performance? And then consistency is the second, because without consistency, there's a lot of time that can go by without knowing, am I even on the right track? We talk about this. We use an app when we go hiking, Lauren and I. And it's called All Trails. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly checking All Trails as I'm on my map to see, are we still on the right track? Because if I start to, or we start to wander, or we come to a fork in the road, we come to part of the trailhead where all of a sudden it veers in two directions, and you think, okay, I could go right or I could go left. Either of those options are clearly available. But if I go right, is this going to take me a two-hour detour?
Right.
Think about it the same way in the workplace. If I'm not doing something that is ideally or in a space that I should be doing it, am I wasting my time? Am I doing it improperly? Am I going to have to now basically fix a problem that I will have created by going right instead of staying on the track left?
Yep.
But a lot of that consistency we don't get if we skip those check-ins, right? Skip those opportunities to receive the feedback or provide it. And I think a lot of that has to do with just open lines of communication. And I'm sure we'll talk more about how to foster that trust in those relationships as we go on in today's talk.
Great.
And John, I think a big piece of that that you skip over a little bit there, but that a lot of us tend to skip over, is these difficult or these crucial conversations don't always come when somebody's done something wrong or when there's been a roadblock or something of that nature. This could come at any point in which in your industry or in a different industry, you're talking to somebody with a slightly differing opinion or that thinks of something a little bit different from you. It's the same thing where we have to pace, we have to pulse check ourselves, and we have to understand we're still following along that route within that conversation. But again, it's not like we're trying to avoid wrongdoing or look at consequences or something of that nature. Yep. These difficult conversations or these crucial conversations can more times than not be these regular work group meetings or these regular one-on-one meetings where we're trying to accomplish a simple task, but those minds may not simply align where we'd like them to.
And a lot of it ties to, Matt, I love the idea behind blind spots. People call them blind spots for a reason, because as individuals, we don't know they exist. That's why they're blind to us. It's helpful to have others that we can rely on, count on, be accountable with, to say, hey, is there a different perspective? Is there another way that this could have been done? Because a lot of us aren't aware, right? We don't know what we don't know. And so thinking about those blind spots and encouraging and being excited for, I like these weekly check-ins. I like these one-on-ones. I like these accountability meetings that we have. So we're able to realize, okay, yes, this is a crucial component of my role. And I want to make sure I'm doing things in the way that might make the most sense. So I'm not having to fix problems. I can be a little bit more proactive than reactive.
Yeah. So if we think about them, obviously difficult conversations can be when there's some type of behavior that was not wanted. So what Matt brought up, it doesn't always have to fall into this space, but of course, fixing any type of misconduct falls into this. It could be managing any conflicts within the team or the organization, or even internally and externally, if you're working with a vendor or you're working with a client or customer who just has a completely different communication style than you, and you're finding that the two of you butt heads often when you're trying to put together a plan or implement something. It can be when we're providing feedback or receiving feedback from somebody. And then, as you both mentioned, it could be something that we wouldn't necessarily think of as a difficult conversation, but I land my opinion on what we should do as a next step forward, and the three other people in the room say, I don't think that's a good option. Mm-hmm. And so everybody is against, I'll call it, what I think. It's difficult in the sense that I see why this is so valuable and they don't. And so it's having to have this, I'll call it, a difficult conversation on almost persuading them or influencing them why my idea might be better, and or being open enough to perhaps hear their perspectives and be able to rethink my opinion and say, okay, well, maybe I don't have the best option and this one that somebody else presented actually seems like a great option. So it's all of a sudden getting outside of your comfort zone and finding somebody else's perspective or opinion as maybe a better option than what I came up with. So it falls across a lot of different conversations and interactions we might have. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing, once we identify or we understand that we're in a crucial or difficult conversation, how do we respond? How do we interact so that we do it appropriately and it moves in a productive direction instead of blowing things out of proportion and then, you know, having it really go south?
I think a big piece of this is honestly keeping it that status quo. When we get into these difficult or these crucial conversations, not thinking about them differently from the other conversations that we normally go through. And what I mean by that is our general communication, the way that we're listening to the other side, the way that we show that empathy, we have those nonverbals and that personability from the other side of that aisle, even though, again, maybe we don't agree 100% with what they're saying in their feedback or in their performance review or whatever it is that they may be discussing, still giving them the floor to share that and giving them that same respect. Yeah. So that again, when now it comes to our turn to speak, we get that same respect back. Right. The other side of that eight ball being, we can't beat around that bush. Knowing that we're in that difficult or that crucial conversation, we still have to, how I'll say it is, tell it how it is. Yeah. It's if we feel one way or another about something, letting them know, positive or negative, how we feel and why we feel that way. Because again, if we tiptoe around it, odds are those problems are significantly less likely to get fixed and they're going to be prolonged for a lot longer, creating much more inefficiency in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I love what you shared there, Matt. I think a lot of it has to do with being accountable on timing. So not putting it off, right? Don't procrastinate anything. Anytime that we run feedback webinars or sessions, even little sections within our active listening on giving and receiving feedback, it's got to be timely. Because if you miss the opportunity to address something when it happens, then all of a sudden it becomes a much bigger deal than it likely was in the first place. And it's this cancer that spreads across that relationship or creates more of a toxic environment than you really want. But if you can call it out immediately, and as you said, treat it like another conversation. It doesn't need to be this big formal elephant in the room. Although it might feel that way, it's generally because those conversations tend to be a little bit less comfortable for us than other conversations. I think having a plan is also important. Having a plan going in, you don't want something scripted. So it's not as if you're going to write down, okay, this is the speech I'm going to give Matt related to blank. That's not going to feel genuine. It won't really feel authentic anyways. And your whole goal is to create this environment that allows these conversations to exist safely and allow them to exist often. And if you can just plan out, here's what I want to share, here's how I'm going to share it, and then you've created a little roadmap for yourself to say, here's how I'm going to get from point A to point B. But it's making sure you focus on the facts, be very objective with things, and avoiding assumptions, avoiding putting words in people's mouths, trying to stick to here's what happened and here's how it made me feel, or here's how it made the situation go, here's what the client responded with, right? Sometimes it's these interactions that happen in an external type of environment or an external type of scenario. It might not just be the two of us that it happened with.
And I think the timely piece is super important. If you think about it in your personal life, it would be unfair for you to go to your significant other or for them to come to you and say, you did this 6 months ago.
Right.
And you're bringing it up now. And it's like, well, why didn't we talk about this 6 months ago or 5 months and 29 days ago when the issue started? Because now all of a sudden, the person receiving that feedback or getting the constructive criticism, let's call it, is all of a sudden on edge and on the defense of, I didn't even know I was doing it. So now I could be redoing this behavior for the last 6 months, when if you had just mentioned it to me in the first place, it wouldn't have built into such a large issue or sticking point for us, where now people almost resent you. They don't trust the feedback, or they're constantly saying, you know I'm going to get something from Jen in 3 months from now saying how this didn't go well. And
they start to think, what else have I not been doing to your liking, right? It's like, okay, I haven't taken out the trash every single Monday, and you're now calling me on something that's been taking place for the last 6 months of 4 Mondays a month.
Right.
What other things around the house have I not been doing to your liking?
Yeah.
And it becomes, again, you start to chip away at the foundation of that relationship.
Totally. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, I didn't say anything because it was uncomfortable. I didn't want to make it a big deal. And while I understand that thought process, I am somebody that hates conflict. I will avoid it at all costs, sometimes to the detriment of the situation. I think it's important, and you'll see all these things floating around on social media. If you think it's a difficult conversation to have now, wait until you wait 6 months and see how much more difficult it's actually going to be. Because now over 6 months, you have been getting more and more agitated about this behavior that the other person doesn't even know they're doing and isn't doing necessarily on purpose. But because you haven't shared that, it's now becoming this huge iceberg when it could have just been a small crack in the road. So I think it's definitely something that if something is big enough where maybe 24 hours, if it's still bothering you after 24 hours, it's probably something that is worth mentioning in some form.
Yeah. I follow a social media guy, Dave Klein, and he made a post related to non-negotiables as managers. And not that everyone on this is a manager per se, but I really like this point. Minor corrections compound into major improvements. Withheld feedback grows into mistrust like cancer. The harsh truth is that you pay the same price whether you do these or not. Skip them and you pay the cost of cleaning up messes at the end. Do them and you invest up front in higher performance.
Yeah.
And so this idea of small things become big things over time. And I would rather manage or be proactive about some of those smaller things that happen to exist, whether I'm in a role and I'm speaking up to my manager, senior leader, or I'm in a management role and I'm leading a team of peers or colleagues. But being proactive versus reactive is typically a winning formula long term.
And John, the one thing that this brings me back to in terms of my thoughts is our Q&A section of our ECS course. We go through the portion with BP where we had the whole issue with Tony Hayward and the answers that he gave in his initial interviews after that whole oil spill occurred in the Gulf of Mexico, and what it was like having Bob Dudley come in, give those proactive responses to those Q&A questions, again, to a national audience, but still being proactive in such a crucial or difficult conversation, and what that does for one, reputation, but also the trust of the brand in the future.
Yeah.
when we think about this in our teams, and right now we're not necessarily thinking about it as that Q&A sake, but more of when we're in that one-on-one or when we're in that small group and we don't necessarily agree, but we have to think about it the same way. This is where your reputation is being built and where that trust is being built. A lot of people don't think about and take into consideration how we are in the calm. It's most likely when we're in those rough waters that they want to know what we're like, how our character builds or how it wanes. And that's what we're going to see here. We have to come with our best foot forwards. And that's normally going to be with that proactive response, like you said.
Yeah. And I think the level of composure around the way in which we respond also leads to better understanding, but I think it puts others at ease when we're composed, not letting our emotions get the best of us, making sure we're listening to others' perspectives, right? We talk about this so much in our active listening skills course, but of course we as human beings like to talk. It's equally as important that we are able to create an environment that allows for and fosters listening and yep. being okay with realizing I don't need to drive this entire conversation. Ask open-ended questions. Ask people how they're feeling about certain things that are existing around the workplace that you feel like this could lead to or this could be down the road. Something crucial or important that we want to make sure we manage up front.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest components is being able to both share your viewpoint clearly, whatever it is, whether it's something that didn't go well, that you would prefer to go a different way next time, whether you have a different opinion, whatever the call it difficult thing might be, being able to share that in a clear and concise way, but also giving other people the floor to talk and share their perspective or how they are feeling about it as well. And that's what's really going to help create, as Matt mentioned, that trust, whether it's in the manager, the team, the brand. It creates that honesty within the relationship that I can come to you with something that I didn't think went well. And I know that together we can solve it or move in a certain direction, but I'm not going to bring an issue to you and then feel like I'm being blamed for it. And we want to mm-hmm. have that open relationship with the people we work with, because that's how it's going to be easiest to move forward and continue to create great products or services or opportunities within the team and within the organization. So when we think about actually putting the feedback together, we've talked about going in and having a plan. What do you both suggest in terms of organizing that information? Obviously, we don't want to wing it, because winging it really doesn't go well for most people. And especially if it's something where there's a difficult or a crucial component to it, winging it is simply a bad idea. So where do you suggest starting?
For me, it goes back to my prior work in corporate America, where everybody takes what we call a DISC assessment essentially at the beginning. And they do this in a ton of companies, a ton of corporations. And I think it's really about understanding how you interact and how those on your team interact as well. Mm-hmm. Finding out whether they are the more assertive or more dominant listeners, or if they prefer to be that open person talking to more strangers and getting those pieces out. This is going to allow you to, I think, understand or put yourself in their shoes as to how they'd want to hear that feedback.
Yeah.
Some people prefer that more to the bone, to a T feedback, where you're saying, this went well, this went poorly, this is what you need to do differently. Other people prefer you to walk them through examples and show them hands-on. Again, knowing how your team interacts is going to be the best way to prep. As you said, we don't want to wing it. We want to make sure that we have a good set of steps for going into this situation, and that as we go through it, we stick to it, meaning that this set of steps is going to be the same outline whenever we go through one of these crucial conversations.
Yeah.
We don't want to make exceptions for one person versus another, as then it'll feel like we're playing favorites and that'll harm our reputation as well. But again, making sure that we stick to this defined set of steps, but that we can tweak that in either our tone of voice or our general content, I think that's going to be the best way to tweak whatever it is we're saying for that audience.
Yeah. And I'm currently reading a book called Surrounded by Idiots, and it's about red, greens, blues, and yellows in terms of personality and their communication style and how they interact with other people. And it's really interesting as I'm reading through the characteristics, I'll call them, of each of the different colors and how they show up to conversations, how they interact with people, how they either focus or lose focus on different projects. And I think it, to your point, you have to know or have an idea of the person that you're communicating with or having this difficult conversation with, because as you said, some people, they want you to come in and say, this is what I liked, this is what I didn't like, and here's how you can fix those didn't like things the next time you do this. Whereas others, they want it to be a back and forth conversation. They want to partake in that feedback. They want to see different examples or bounce ideas off of you to say, is this more what you're looking for? And if you're going into a conversation with somebody that likes that style and you go in and say, this worked well, this didn't, do this next time, they might feel belittled, they might feel embarrassed, and they might not take that feedback or that difficult conversation because it was uncomfortable and it didn't feel empathetic or inclusive for them in the conversation.
Yeah, I would say from a planning perspective, know what your point is first.
Yeah,
right. Be clear right out of the gates so that there isn't this long wind up, or, you know, I've got a 6 mile warm up in this conversation before I really get into the nuts and bolts of this.
It's the bluff
again. Once you're
again.
Clear. Yep, it is. It's that bottom line up front. Once you're clear with that upfront piece and you've stated, here's the thing that we're talking about today, right? Here's the elephant in the room, so to speak. Then listen, ask questions, try and get all the information, especially if you don't know it up front. But you'd be amazed at how much we can accomplish just by listening, because you may sit there and realize, wow, okay, my realization of this or my thought process was actually off. And then all of a sudden the crucial or difficult conversation, you realize very quickly, all right, it's not crucial, it's not that difficult. I was misunderstood, or I didn't fully see the big picture. But being clear up front, I think, makes all the sense in the world in terms of not making it a bigger deal than it may already be.
Yeah. And I really like the saying, your feedback or your approach should be drawn in sand, not stone. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to go in, and perhaps you didn't have all of the information, as you just mentioned, John, and being able to shift your perspective of what you thought or how you approach something simply because you've gotten more information that now points into, you know, we did this because X, Y, and Z. If X, Y, and Z were not a component, I'd say this is not something we should have done. But because of those things, that's where you can say to yourself, okay, I would have made the same decision. So knowing that information is helpful. Now let's see if we can avoid X, Y, and Z even being a component the next time that this comes up. But being flexible with that feedback, and again, asking those questions, getting the other person or group to be part of this difficult conversation so it doesn't feel too authoritarian or like I know everything and you all are being scolded or in trouble for something.
Yeah. And then I think, after the fact, it's about accountability, and it's about making sure that there's a plan in place, check-ins in place, timeline is in place, expectations are clear, maybe getting it or tying it to, remember, this is the reason why we do what we do. This is the vision statement we've got as an organization. This is the value our team brings to this part of the business. This is why we have this relationship with this account or this client. But continuing to tie it back to the why, I believe, creates a lot of buy-in from both parties. And then the accountability timeline piece is crucial, because if you don't do those check-ins, again, the longer time goes by, all of a sudden you realize, okay, I haven't been holding any consistency to this method or this model.
Right.
And it's hard to measure what we don't manage. Yeah. I've used that phrase before. What gets measured gets managed. And if we're not measuring things, then it's hard to see, okay, is this going in the direction I wanted it to or we wanted it to or not, because I'm not really keeping tabs on it.
Yeah. And I really like, when it comes to feedback or difficult conversations, in one of our programs, we talk about the SBIR method, and it's labeling the situation, labeling the behavior, the impact, whether what we know it had or what we assume it will have if it's something we're giving immediately, and then a request. And I think you brought up a great point, having that accountability afterwards. So if something didn't go well, it's requesting, is this something that we can check in every other week going forward on? We'll have a call, we'll have a meeting, we'll schedule something, but Are you prepared to connect on some certain time or whatever the next thing is? But that's your request to the person that you are or group that you're interacting with on the follow-up, the accountability. Let's make sure that what we've just talked about and the situation that hopefully we're solving or making better, whatever the situation is now going in a productive direction. It's not providing feedback or having a difficult conversation and then not touching it for 6 months. Because again, that doesn't lead to changing behavior. I think the other way to think about it from our perspective is what we do in our programs every single day. So in our programs, we're having difficult conversations with people or crucial conversations around their skill set. And they get up in the front of the room. It's very vulnerable, but we're actively coaching them in the moment. We're telling them what's not working and to do it differently. And as Matt stated earlier, it's having that same approach with every person that comes up because you want to create that consistency. That's what helps create that trust and honesty and I'll call it more comfortability in the room as we continue to go through this process over 2 full days and you're being coached in the moment in front of perhaps 10, 11 other peers, plus a stranger that's coming in to run this program. And so having that process in place, that organizational process, having the delivery that's in an empathetic growth type of setting, and then having the follow-up on here's what it is and here's what to do the next time you're up covers all three of those areas that we just talked about.
Yeah. And not to overwhelm our listeners, but the word choice we use matters. And
absolutely.
I've learned this quite a bit from my wife, Lauren, who works in physical therapy. She's a physical therapist and she says language hurts or helps. And as she thinks about that through the lens of her patients, the way that she tells people or has interactions with her patients influences their pain and how they feel about leaving the session, how they feel coming into the session. We follow a similar practice and process in our communication skills courses. And we're very clear when we open, we are not here to tell you what we do is right and what you're doing is wrong because you haven't been through this. It's not on this right or wrong scale. Let's instead look at it across this effectiveness spectrum. And there are things that speakers do that allow them to be incredibly effective in the front of the room. There are things that some speakers do they are not even aware of that are happening physically or happening vocally or happen in the way in which they craft the message that in turn are causing them to come across or be perceived less effective.
Yep.
And it's not so much right or wrong in that sense, the same way that you can look at 10 different golfers on the pro golf tour and all 10 of them might have different swing mechanics and all 10 of them could be in the top 10 in terms of overall points in the golf rankings. No two swings are the same. I truly believe no two styles of communication are the same. That's what makes it a fun skill set is it is an imperfect skill set to begin with, but it's trying to chase that effectiveness. And can I make sure I'm doing things on purpose with intent that are allowing me to get the outcomes I'm trying to attain?
Yep. I actually just listened to a video clip about an hour interview of Jennifer Garner and Adam Grant speaking at a conference, and they're talking about feedback at a certain point. And I'm summarizing here, but Adam Grant said something about approaching feedback in a positive light while still being straightforward can be super helpful. He says, avoid the compliment sandwich. It very rarely works. Either people hear the first thing and the last thing, which are the good parts, and they skip the thing you're trying to fix in the middle, or people see it for what it is. They say, okay, I know I'm going to get buttered up with something that's going well. And then they're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. So it's really not an effective way of providing feedback. He says there's 19 words that you can use. And again, I'm summarizing this. I don't actually know if this is 19 specific words, but it's something along the lines of, I have very high expectations for you, and I am confident that you can reach them. And it's a great way of approaching that feedback on, I am giving you this feedback because I want you to do well. And I know that you have the potential to do that. And so I am doing what I can as a manager, a team member, whatever your interaction might be, on helping you achieve those goals or helping you achieve the best ability level that you can at this project within this role. So I think it's an interesting way of level setting that interaction and fostering that atmosphere of being open and creating a culture of feedback, that you get positive feedback, you get critical feedback, and people are looking for both all the time. And I think that's really important, is that people are interested in getting the feedback, whether it's good or bad, because they know that it's being provided in a space of trust and positivity.
Yeah. There's an entrepreneur I follow whose name is Alex Brogan, and he talks about this concept he calls radical candor. Mm-hmm. And it's not being brutally honest, but as he defines radical candor, it's being direct without being rude. And so considering how you care about the individual personally, and then how you're able to challenge in a direct way. And he calls it, as you think about this, 15-second policy. Use radical candor at home with the 15-second policy. If a problem can be fixed in 15 seconds, tell the person. Yep. If a friend of yours has something in their teeth, tell them so they can fix it, because that doesn't take longer than 15 seconds. Right. If it's a larger problem, wait to mention it to when it can be fixed. And that's where it's done in privacy. It's done with considerations of the environment and all those other pieces that come into play. But this idea of being direct without fearing, okay, if I do that, I'm going to come across rude. No, that's not really the case. Coming across direct is a good thing, and you can still do that without being rude or inconsiderate of people's feelings or anything else.
And I think that's where the empathy side comes in. Know how you're delivering it, how physically, how you're saying it, the volume you use, the inflection you deliver it in, the pausing throughout, all of that stuff impacts how somebody hears it. And we have to be aware that when we come to a difficult conversation, there are two different realities, yours and the person that you're interacting with. If there are more than two people, there might be five different realities if there are five people there. So approaching it in that way, knowing that the way I understand and see this right now could be completely different from the other individuals in the room. So again, I think this is a really important topic, and I think it's one that everybody deals with. To summarize, when you have these difficult conversations or crucial conversations, know what your purpose is as you go into it. If you're not sure and you're winging it, it's not going to go well. So understand what the thing is that you want to talk about, and then prepare that ahead of time. I mentioned that SBIR method. There are a couple other methods out there that work great in terms of an organizational process for labeling what the thing is and then how you address it moving forward. But as John and Matt have both mentioned, try and make it an inclusive conversation. Ask questions. Have the other person share more from their perspective, and you sit back and do some listening. And then at the end of it, once it feels like the conversation has come to a close and there's nothing else to discuss, look at, where do we go from here? What does a next step look like so that we can somehow measure this or track it to make sure that it's going in the right direction? If there are any other topics you would like to hear us talk about, please feel free to respond to our email, and we'll get those in the flow of our upcoming podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. Again, I am your host, Jen Alex. Vautier Communications is in the business of business communication skills. We coach and train both individuals and groups on how to elevate their presence and increase their impact through the way they communicate, present, and write. If you want to learn more about our in-person or virtual training options, visit our website at www.vautiercommunications.com. Thanks for listening.